I generally don't like when crypto art is quiet, because in quiet moments, we have a tendency to turn negative. When sales are slow, the few sales we see are often met with reactionary criticism, which is natural seeing as you can probably name on one hand the artists who seem to achieve such sales, and it's usually plucked from a pretty small group. In quiet moments, we worry about money more, there's less interaction on our posts and with our art. It's easy to get beaten down or distracted by the influencer tactics and marketeering that always emerges to the forefront during these moments. But slow moments in crypto art are our best opportunity to hone in on people, trends, and developments that inspire and excite us. When things are cranking, when there's news and alpha and hot takes coming all the time, we get consumed by the timeline. When the timeline is slow, we can zoom in on what's positive. And so today we're going to do just that. I wanted to have the remarkable artist George Boya on the show for a few reasons. One, I love his art, and I'm dying to get into process more than we have on the podcast previously. But George isn't just working alone these days. He's got a whole series, in fact, Partners in Crime, featuring his collaborative artworks with other artists I deeply admire. Andre Stelvecchio, Paradigm Stories, WG Meets. These are just a few of the artists who've released incredible collaborations with Mr. Boya recently. Collaborations are integral to the history of crypto art, and they always enliven me. Here is the free artistic spirit may manifest. Here is the remarkable power of digital toolkits. Here's the community. Here is a lot worth digging into. So for the next 40-something minutes, that's exactly what we're going to do. Coborn, George Boya, and I are going to dig deep into collaborations in all their glory and nuance. And that's what's coming up on this week's Mocha Live podcast. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Mocha Live podcast. My name is Max Cohen. It is my pleasure to greet you as you jump onto the podcast today. It is 3:03 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in beautiful springtime Brooklyn, New York. And let's introduce everyone else on the podcast today. As always, joining us is our co-host. That would be the indelible, inimitable founder of the Museum of Crypto Art, Coborn Bell. Coborn, how are you doing?
Pleasure. Thank you for having me yet again, Max.
Pleasure is all mine, friend. And the pleasure of our lovely audience. And then joining Coborn and I today, a guest who's been making crypto art for better part of a half decade, consistently boasts one of the most unique aesthetics I've ever seen, a collage master, and most importantly for our purposes today, a master of collaboration. So please welcome George Boya to Mocha Live. George, thank you so much for being with us. We are stoked.
Thank you, guys. So happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation and the kind words, Max.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, pleasure is all ours. So this is not the first weird, kind of slow, less bombastic crypto art moment that we have seen during our tenure on the Mocha Live podcast. And I think that it's always really important in these times for us to talk to like OG artists in the space, because I think what we can do in these slower moments is establish crypto art's nuances in a larger context, which I think can be really beneficial emotionally and also really difficult when there's so much kind of going on. And I think, again, there are these important quirks that we can kind of get into the nitty gritty on that I like to when, again, that are difficult when things are like flashing all around you. So today, George, I want to talk about collaborations in crypto art, because it's something that ever since I came into crypto art, started going through the Genesis collection of the museum, started talking to Coborn and other artists, it was just clear that this was like an extremely important tenet of crypto art from its inception. And yet today it feels a lot less common. So I will start off at the beginning. When you first got into crypto art, George, in like the spring of 2020, I believe, what was the state of like collaborations in crypto art? Were you seeing a lot of them? Were you seeing them sporadically? Who was kind of involved? Your memory, sir.
I remember very well. Look, there were not so many collaborations, but there were really some big striking ones that stood, I think, in my opinion, as a symbol for all of us that, you know, were onboarded back then to maybe start, you know, thinking of collaborating with one another. You know, I've been a collage artist for the last 20 years, and being a traditional collage artist before the digital space, collaborations was something that I always loved, but it was very difficult to make with another artist using, you know, traditional analog tools. And when I saw the digital space and the easiness that we can collaborate with each other, you know, I started thinking it, and you know, watching other of my colleagues doing really cool stuff, and I think month by month, you know, the collaborations were becoming more and more, and it was a beautiful time. There were also larger collaborations like, you know, the async projects that were happening back then, very important. And I think we were starting interacting with one another in this way. Also, I believe that, you know, art is, first of all, communication. And in this way, we were communicating with one another. You know, all artists, but still all strangers with different backgrounds were finding a common language through art and through collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, it's always seemed to me that like crypto art is perfect for collaboration because of exactly what you said, right? You have all of these different backgrounds and these different like levels of technical ability and different interests that especially early crypto art are all just kind of being merged in this place that people are kind of finding by chance. And then seeing those aesthetics merge into a single place is really, really interesting to me. And probably probably has not been a riper time for it in an art movement.
Yeah, there was a willingness to collaborate with one another. I think that back then there was this, you know, we were kind of trying to know this new world, but know each other. You must, you know, put them the events into a context because it was also the pandemic, so we didn't have any other relationships with the outside world. So we our messages, maybe sometimes talking, and the art, the most important thing of all.
It might be a topic for another day, but I do think we collectively underestimate the importance of like pandemic nuances on early crypto art culture, but again, maybe that's a bigger topic
for me. Sorry, because I want to say something, because I said it before that back then it felt like you know, the whole world stood still, and we were moving faster than ever before in this little you know, world. It was amazing. It was really amazing. Yes,
sure. What was a first collaboration you did with another crypto artist, George?
The first one was with my friend, brilliant, talented watercolor artist, Jung Dunja. Colborn maybe still remembers her. Very beautiful watercolor art. And I saw one of her artworks and was thinking of how I can, you know, incorporate some of my things. And we started talking, and she gave me the permission to, you know, experiment a little bit with her art, and it ended up, you know, as a very beautiful collaboration of collage and watercolor, two styles that, you know, it was interesting to see together.
Yeah, I mean, Colborn, at least my perception of like the importance of collaborative artwork, that came a lot from something you told me. I don't remember when, but like, I think it was during one of our talks during the bear market when we were kind of lamenting this and that. And you had mentioned something about how, like, in your early days of crypto art, it seemed like there was so much more willingness on the part of this small community to be communal with one another in terms of the artistry itself, not just like the public conversation on Twitter. Do I read that right? Like, can you talk a bit about that?
I mean, I think for me, it was just indicative of where we were going and what we wanted to experience, which was both kind of like the melding of the digital, but the melding of the intercultural. And it was fantastic to be having, you know, more the conversations were smaller, but they were so big that it felt really limitless. And I think this was inspiring a lot of people to come together to try and synthesize these ideas, these concepts into a work or a piece, and just beginning to figure out how to meld things like a watercolor painter with a collage artist. It was so antithetical to any sort of commercial creation that you would see in the traditional art world today, that it felt just of the spirit and very much of the digital. So it was exciting. It was exciting to see all of these things.
It always reminds me of Bea and Judy from Dada's The Invisible Economy, their series of essays. And one of the things that they talk about in these essays is, and what I gravitate towards conceptually, is this idea of like star systems in art, that like you end up having attention glommed onto single actors, and their orbit becomes so strong, and then like it sucks up attention into like individual bodies. And collaborations on their face are a way of democratizing that attention. You know, George, you mentioned it before, the async collaborations, like one of the most famous, perhaps the most famous, was First Supper, which had 13 artists, you know, Xcopy and Josie Bellini and Coldy and Connie Digital and Vans Design, right? Like artists who today have a giant name and a giant foothold, and artists who today are like regrettably don't have as much like name recognition and kind of like institutional attention. And like we could sit here all day and name examples like Super Rare Roses. Zach Yanger has like an oeuvre filled with collaborations, and Hackatow with Hack Hex, which was their collaboration with Hex OX6C. Like Dada.art was basically a collaboration at its core.
Can I share one, Max? I've never shared anything before.
Sure, yeah.
Can you let it into the show, maybe?
I can. So what are we looking at, Colborne?
So this was, this actually came probably a little bit later than, but this was a 10-artist collaboration for a Gen Z exhibit that Super Rare did that I think most people have largely forgotten about and have no idea, but it was kind of like the anointed, like, younger generation to carry this movement forward. And it was Ferocious, Jonathan Wolf, Merkpin, Black Sneakers, Mushba, Arv, MCM, Fakito, Federico Bona, Femzor, Etienne Krauss, and Pear.
It's called Through Time and Space, for what it's worth.
It's called Through Time and Space. It was never sold, but it was 10 of these kind of like emergent creators, young, and here it sits.
It's quite beautiful. And it's just, I mean, it's interesting that like this thing was so integral to early crypto art, and it seems to be integral to a lot of platforms, Async, Super Rare, Dada, et cetera. And yet it feels like until very recently, perhaps, they just kind of fell out of vogue. So I want to just stop there and say, like, George, why do you think people kind of on the whole, and I started noticing this in like, you know, 2021, 2022, when I was becoming acclimated to crypto art, that there just wasn't really a collaborative artistic spirit. I mean, do you agree with that? And if so, why or why not?
Look, yes, I agree. But, you know, I cannot have, you know, an explanation 100%. I think that because Async does not exist anymore, you know, we don't have a collaborative platform. Maybe that plays part. Maybe... there are different trends evolving all the time. Maybe now, you know, we are seeking more IRL stuff. Maybe we drifted apart. I cannot find the exact
I have reason. A theory.
By all means.
Okay. So my theory is that initially the big innovation was to like export the marketing to more artists. Right. But I think it was really Art Blocks that figured out in true crypto fashion that you want to export the marketing to the holders. Mm. Right. So when you're doing a one of X, it's not suddenly, you know, 2 or 5 or 10 artists saying we participated in this collaboration, but suddenly it's, you know, 500, 1,000, 10,000 holders saying we have a financial incentive and you should come in because it's this one artist.
That's a good theory, Colborne. Because indeed, there is a collaboration between the holders right now. I mean, they act in a collaborative way, and that's a good.
Yeah, I mean, like just going off of that, like this collaboration with holders. I've been engaged for quite a while now in writing kind of a comprehensive history of Matt Cain's contractual obligations performance from late last year. And so much of that, whether holders of these pieces were aware or not, they were engaging in like a collaboration with the artist, because Matt Cain would change the tact of the performance to come based on what he was hearing in the community, based on like literal like tweets and ideas that were like thrown at him, based on whether people were paying royalties on pieces or not. And I do think that that's really interesting. And actually, this brings me to a question that I had wanted to ask you, Colborne, which was like, do you think there is a way, or rather, is there a way that you've seen that collectors have been or could be a part of the like actual artistic collaboration process? Or does the mechanism of collecting, in your opinion, like kind of best come on the back end with no intervention into the artistry?
I'm sorry, was that directed at me?
Yeah, sorry.
So could you repeat it? It kind of stuttered for me.
Yeah, of course. I was wondering, like, is there a way that you've seen or that you believe that art collectors can be a part of the collaboration process, or does collecting itself as an action best come on the back end with no real like inclusion in the process?
Well, I think, goodness, right? I think that is perhaps an emergent characteristic of AI. But I'm also leaning towards the idea that, you know, like the artist is the curator of their art. So it depends where they want, I guess, the collector to be involved in either the co-creation or simply just the promotion of that work. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Hey, look, as a part of, you know, the communication that art is, everyone is a collaborator, both the artist and the collector. I mean, the artist transmits a message, and if the message is well received by a collector, it's a communication. I mean, other things will come out. And I guess it's also part of its one's character. I mean, for example, Basilius is a collector. He's also someone who wants to communicate with the artist, and maybe get a little bit involved in the process, and so it's all about the character.
Yeah, I mean, I think Basileus is a great example. I'm reminded of the Async Blueprint project that Basileus did with Hair of Medusa, which was like a play on Basileus's own kind of like Greco face in a coin. And yeah, George, you've worked with Hair of Medusa. I mean, I have a couple of people you've collaborated with, like Andre Stelvecchio and Sturek, Idiora, and Fabien Rashid and Kazlab. What is, to get back to like the conceptual part of this, like what draws you to collaboration today?
What drew me from the beginning, you know, always wanted, you know, to create with friends, in a way. So always the first people that I'm seeking to collaborate is usually my friends, who I know that I will share common ideas, and I know that I will have a smooth process, which is very important for me as an artist. I mean, the result, it is important, but I want also, you know, to have fun with the art. And I always look at it a bit, you know, like a game. Each collaboration was kind of different. Sometimes we, you know, brainstorm for days, for example, with Sturek, to, you know, find a nice common theme to work on. Sometimes with other artists, maybe, for example, Hair of Medusa had a really nice background, and she sent it to me and said, George, you know, does this inspire you to create something? Yeah, I mean, it's every collaboration is different and had its own beauty.
If we can, I'd love to dive into like the process itself, because it kind of mystifies me. Like, when you're approached for a collaboration, or you approach someone and you actually start to dig into creating a work, like, how do you know how much of yourself to put into a collaboration? How do you strike that balance of not of being yourself and having your own style shine while not being overly dominant?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I played with it in a lot of different ways. Let's say, for example, I could make the motion of the part of the motion in animation of an article. So I feel that, I'm the one who's putting the movement. So I feel that I equally, contributed to the art with the other artists. Sometimes it's the merging of the ideas. But, for me, I always, I will talk more about how I feel with the current collaboration project that I'm doing, because this is what I have more in my mind right now. I'm approaching, the artist, always with a lot of respect for their art, and my point is first of all to create an art with the other partner that they will first appreciate and love. So I don't know. Through this process, we can then create a beautiful result.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, again, like, I'm so fascinated in the process. Like, are these conversations, like, when you're throwing a piece back and forth? I know you said that each collaboration is different, but are you, like, actually having these conversations while you're collaborating, or is it more kind of intuitive as you both kind of approach some kind of equilibrium between your style?
In most of them, there is a lot of conversation and coming back and forth. But, it is more what comes natural with the other person. I mean, if they want to, talk about it a lot and discuss it and change stuff and redo them and give the PSD file to them and give it to me back and all that stuff. I mean, we did something like that with Richie, Mr. Richie. I mean, he did his stuff. He sent it to me. I put my stuff, and we were cool. But we knew each other's style, and there was also a trust. Sometimes you admire each other, so you don't want to, say something negative like change this or change that. You feel content with what the other person did because of this trust. And like I said, every case is very different.
Yeah, Max, you'll learn quickly that there is no one straight answer to what is the creative process.
Sure. Well, it's always interesting to me because, like, my creative process is very simple, right? I sit, and I think this is probably the same for most writers. It's like you sit in a room by yourself and you get the words out and then you revise them and on it goes. Like, I know that when you publish novels, anytime you read a novel, there's a long acknowledgement section at the end of people who read it and gave advice and editors and agents and so on and so forth. But most of the process is just, it's very clear cut, right? You have a blank page and you have to fill that blank page with words. Mm. One thing I want to do more on the podcast is explore this question for my questions of, like, how does art actually get made? And collaborations, it's so strange because it's so case by case. George, you've been doing a lot more collaborations recently, or a lot of collaborations recently. We had hinted at the one you did just sold a couple of days ago, or maybe even yesterday, to Basileus, Emperor of Angels with Andres Delvecchio. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that right now, in this moment, this very kind of slow, strange time in crypto art, that collaboration feels necessary or more necessary? As in, like, is it purely like Colborne, you had mentioned before, like a financial thing where you have like more artists, more attention, or is there a deeper kind of spiritual component?
Yeah, I think it's very, the times are a little bit dark now. I feel that, we must come together somehow. And, this whole project with the collaborations, it's the Partners in Crime series. It's something that I would like to be, to stand as a symbol of that above all. Because I think we are drifting apart. We all celebrate those artists that, are now, more successful and stuff like that from 2020 or 2019. But I remember a lot of artists that quit all this process in the meantime. And I feel a little sad about how it's... this whole world is changing, and I feel that if I approach one and then another, and put them all in a big series of collaborations that will keep on going, I will create something beautiful after a while that will involve more and more of the community in a single project. Each week, another.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that it's really important to hear you say that. And it's a very beautiful sentiment, because I do think that there are ways in which, like, the collaborative ideology can be played purely for financial gain, where you're just like, here's five artists, here's six artists. Wouldn't you like one work by all of them? And that's kind of like a selling point for the artwork itself. But maybe it kind of lacks that, like, I don't know, that more community-based cohesion. I wanted to bring up a quote that I found of yours, George, that you did with Collage Magazine. That's K-O-L-A-J. You said, "I feel that collage is the best tool for an artist nowadays to visualize in two dimensions the message that he or she wants to convey from his or her mind to the viewer. Collage is a composition of images, and we live in the age of images. We communicate through images, and our brain is adapting in order to faster decode the symbolism behind them." Obviously, you're a collage artist, mm-hmm. but I couldn't help but think as I read that quote that there's some kind of a thematic connection between collage artistry and collaging actual artists together into one tapestry. I guess before I go on, like, do you feel that that's deserved, or am I reaching way too far?
No. Actually, it was very good. I read that 10 years ago, I think. It was, yeah, but, listening to it again after all these years, it still holds strong. Collage, it's a meta tool. I mean, you do not create something from nothing. You are taking material that exists and mix them in another way. And collage always had the collaboration inside. It is the perfect tool to, I mean, all the big collaborations were collages, and also the AI tools are collage tools. Mm-hmm. They do not create something out of nothing. They are mixing stuff, like a perfect collage artist, but still is making a collage. So collage equals collaboration, to finish that.
Can I just dive in real quick there and just say that I think this is part of like the mega mental mind cultural everything shift that we're going through, is that we have realized there is still capitalism always wants to drive everybody into the smallest niche possible. Yeah. Niche possible.
You sound like, right? Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Smallest niche possible.
And that specialization is the way of the future, but or is the way of production, right? The more specialized you are, the more in demand you are. But I really think as we have all of these tools, it's more about collaboration and orchestration and collaging with those tools. And this is really what is the grind, is that for the longest time, everybody was told to like go become, you know, a hyper specialized in something. But now it's really about what you can put together through organization by bringing people together. And I think that is emergent, whereas the other one is perhaps, you know, the legacy paradigm.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really, really interesting point. You know, it makes me think of like, yeah, please, George.
Look, sorry that I interrupted you. Look, Colburn, I think this in, you know, in a bigger picture is the rise of the digital world. I mean, for me, I feel that this digital world is like an extension of our minds. In a way, maybe it is the first real human world we are creating, because the world outside, we use the materials of nature and stuff like that. Now we are using the material of our minds. And, you know, this digital world needs new tools, new art, new values, new money, new. It has its own, you know, not yet rules. I think we are trying to discover the rules, but, you know, has a lot of different capabilities. And this one will bring the old system down. In a way, and I think back then, I think I always come to the 2020, the nostalgia of those days. But you know, it was a very good example of how the digital world can still work, even if the real world came to a stop. Because now we're living kind of in between. I mean, you know, we want to have our fun here, but we want to go to IRL events and talk with people and go to galleries and go to parties and go to drink and all that stuff. And, you know, maybe this what we mean that, you know, the older days were somehow different.
I mean, no, I think that's absolutely correct. And that the idea was always that we could go into these metaverse spaces, and attest to these big ideas. But really, these are representations, or they're micro experiments on what we could like broader, more like structurally shift into. But we want to test it first, where the form is abstract in the digital, then render it, you know, more permanent in the physical.
Exactly. And through this, you know, experiment, you know, cool things happened. All these collaborations were cool things, because they also, you know, created friendships, which were important. And you know, groups of people like what we are doing in Cult Crypto Art. I think we all came together through collaborations, because we learn about each other through these collaborations and stuff like that. Anyway, it all comes to communication.
Well, I want to synthesize a couple of points that both of you made to talk a little bit about AI. Because we are contractually obligated to speak about AI for at least 10 minutes on the Mocha Live podcast. But specifically, like, two things, right? So, you know, we're talking about communication between artists. George, you had mentioned that, like, art is essentially an extension of somebody's mind, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're circling through these questions with AI of appropriation, and whether, like, an AI being trained on someone else's work, whether that's, like, honoring their work, whether it's in communication with them, whether it obfuscates them so much that they're not even present in there. And it's like it's almost all of these conversations about collaboration taken to like their logical conclusion, right? It's like, well, what if you separate the art from the mind? What if you're using all of these things without, you know, stringent permission? What if it's not a meeting of the mind so much as it is like a car crash between minds, you know, that no one's fully aware of on the front end? Does that help you conceptualize, George, like what collaborations are or what they can do? Or do you think that, again, it's kind of like a logical conclusion that the more we bring collaborations into our lives, the more like art that we are accustomed to seeing be kind of like this interweaving between two or more artists that will become more accustomed to just like having more interwoven styles, that there may not be like we may not end up with styles at all because everything is a clashing collaboration, quote unquote collaboration, between all of these different like subconscious elements.
Yeah, probably we will come to that point. But you know, if we are talking about the AI is collaborating in a way with all the artists of the past and the present, and produces a result which is cool. Of course, we as humans collaborate with each other again to present. To the viewers, a really unique result that looks a bit like my art and let's say Colborn's art together. Look, I'm very pro, even with collaborating with AI, collaborating with everything, because, you know, Max, there is also the problem for an artist that after a while, he starts repeat himself. I say himself about me, and you know, for all the, and this is a very dangerous situation, because if you start repeating yourself and realize that you are repeating yourself, you might come to a block and say that, okay, that's it for me. I mean. But I cannot do anything else. And collaborations, act like, a refresher of this thing. You say, okay, I stuck here. Okay, I will collaborate with another artist now, create something new, maybe get inspired, get a bit of boost and find something new. It's like, being on your own for a long time and, say, okay, fuck it, I will go and find some friends now and have some fun and talk, and then come again to my home and do something, and I will feel better.
Yeah, I want to hang on this concept of like non-participatory collaborations, I suppose, for lack of a better word. And what I'm thinking of specifically is like Xcopy making their work CCO, and like the other week, Vipe.io. Release like metaverse avatars that are based on Grifters, the PFP project that Xcopy had put out, right? Which isn't like Xcopy, as far as I know, didn't like participate in that collaboration, yet it was a collaboration nonetheless, right? It's like one-sided with this piece of iconography. And that strikes me as interesting.
Yeah, it is,
right?
It is.
Because like, is the collaborative spirit still there? Is it almost like front-loaded if one of the participants isn't, again, like aware of their participation necessarily in the process?
Look, man, he was aware that they will make stuff when he made all these things free of copyright. And I think he made it for that. I like it. I never did it. But I like, the stuff that I see the products coming out of this. Sort of collaboration. I cannot know what Xcopy thinks, but if it was about me and my art, I would have been, felt honored and happy. And I didn't think, I didn't see anything abusive in that.
Of course.
In that idea. And I don't think it can be something abusive about that. Everyone is free to create whatever. The mutation derivatives, for example, were very cool. I really like them from Xcopy.
I guess it's just like, there's like, where's the line where like a derivative ends and a collaboration begins? And like, does a collaboration, like a true collaboration, require the express consent. Aware consent of all of these parties, right? Because otherwise you just have homage or derivative, even if like the artist has said like, this is okay, I want you to make derivatives, I want you to honor this artwork any way you want, it feels like again, there's a thin line where these things fall into different camps.
Yeah, it is also about what the artist that is creating these derivatives slash collaboration slash whatever thinks. I mean, if he feels that he's collaborating with Xcopy, I mean, who are to judge this thing? Yeah. I mean, whatever he feels, maybe others did it, you know, to make some quick money. I mean, it's okay. We're in the crypto space. After all,
yeah. Well, I mean, we can extrapolate this outward, right? To you know, whether it's like, you know, a movie like 10 Things I Hate About You, which is I believe it's a play on Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, or you know, rap artists sampling old Motown beats. Again, where does the sample end and the collaboration begin? Are these terms even necessary, or do we just have to expand our idea of what a collaboration is? I don't have an answer to that.
I'm just going to say, I think we would hope that the future is more of a collective global collaboration than it has been in the past, right? Than it has been centered around the idea generally of like great men and women who have like brought us forward. And I would love to begin to like work to rebuild collective narratives around like where we're going, what we're creating. And that's hard because like history tends to remember individuals and enshrine individuals and build up legacies around individuals.
That's true, Colbon, that's true. But we'll try to change that.
So I guess I want to hang on this idea as like our kind of last conversation point of the day. And Colbon, you and I had been speaking about like platform incentives in the podcast the other day. And I'm wondering, like, you know, Async was a platform that I think had offered great incentives for artists to collaborate by just offering, like, basically all these weird, interesting, creative ways in which the platform could elevate collaborations. And I'm wondering, like, especially as we continue to see new technologies emerging and new uses for technologies emerging, like, some artists are mastering a technological practice, while others are mastering a thematic practice. And that doesn't always cross over, but it feels like this is a ripe moment perhaps for artists to like get out of their head and explore them across someone else's canvas, so to speak. So like, is there a way to incentivize platforms to make that happen? Again, no answer.
After Async, I don't know, man. Platforms need their own incentives also, you know, in order to support something. I don't know if someone has a good plan. I think there are some platforms that are trying to make this sort of collaborative projects with layers and stuff like that, like this, but in a smaller scale. I think at some point we can take it in our hands, you know, the situation. Like.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, maybe I guess this is the next step.
The platforms go where we go, right? So this is something that we want to see, and which is
symbiotic relationship. The platforms. For me, it's a good time to do whatever you like. Do art, collaborate more. I mean, things are a bit, you know, there is not this bull market kind of thing, so.
Yeah, if your name is an Xcopy, it's a good time to experiment. And I guess if your name is Xcopy, it's a good time to experiment too.
Okay, we say that, but, you know, he's someone who is holding the flag right now.
For sure. This seems like a good place to cap our conversation for today. And it was really fun. And I'm really glad we got to talk about this topic. I've noticed subconsciously that I've been smiling a lot during this podcast, which is a welcome change from some of the podcast topics that we have had in the recent past. So before we go, George, I want to give you a moment to kind of just tell the listeners and our audience what you have going on, anything they should know about you or anything you'd like the world to know. So please take the floor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, I will not say a lot, just that, you know, I'm currently working in this collaboration series that sparked this beautiful podcast. and it's called Partners in Crime. Each week I collaborate with a different artist using my collage stained glass technique. And I'm trying, you know, to incorporate their style into something new, both for the other artist to enjoy, but also for the viewers. I'm ending and have everything in the cult crypto art foundation world that we have. It's pretty active now. That's all. Not so much.
All right. Well, you can check out Partners in Crime and all things George Boya. You can visit at Boya George on Twitter. Check out what George has going on. If you liked what you heard on this podcast, we would really appreciate a like or a subscribe or a follow, or there's usually a button in your favorite podcast listening app of choice that lets you tell us that you like us, and we'd appreciate it if you click that. You can also give us a follow on Substack at museumofcrypto.com. I'm sorry, museumofcrypto.substack.com. We'll have a newsletter coming up at some point this afternoon. I'm going to jump right from this podcast to finishing that up. So if you like newsletters written by harried writers, this is for you. This has been really fun. And George, I want to say thank you once again.
Yeah, me too, me too. I really enjoyed it, guys. Thank you so much for
the invitation. And thanks, everyone, for being here with us, from myself, from Colborne, from George. So long, everyone, and we'll see you real soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Mocha Live podcast. This episode was edited and produced by me, Max Cohen. I'd like to extend a big thanks to George Boya for being our guest this week, and a big thanks as always to Colborne Bell for being my co-host. Thanks as well to Julian Brangold for composing our intro and outro music, and to Dave Fox for composing our cold open theme. Lastly, I'd like to thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. We always appreciate it. We loved having you with us for this podcast, and we hope to have you with us for the next one. We'll see you real soon.